Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, January 28th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we bring you the tech news you need. It's Friday and we're kicking it off liquid style.
Yeah.
Happy Liquid Friday, everyone.
Happy Liquid Friday. Joining us from across the continent is Ayaz Akhtar from PCMag.com.
Yes, and I don't have any beer today.
Well, you don't have to have beer. You could have any liquid. You could have
water
juice.
Would
you could
be
have
fine.
Coffee. You could have tea.
You almost have. You almost have beer. You have beard.
I have beard. This is true. It's very close. I'll work on that.
Tell Lance you need a liquid budget.
Are you watching, Lance? Go bring me a coffee.
Fetch me a coffee, editor in chief.
Formerly of PC Mag,
I'll just take this down.
So as we are speaking, the president of Egypt is on television addressing the world about the disturbances in Egypt. So this news may change very rapidly, but as we're recording, Egypt has not had internet all day long on Friday, and it's late there. The Egyptian government appeared to disconnect the internet in Egypt for 88% of carriers by asking the four major carriers in Egypt to remove all of their DNS servers from Egypt-bound router tables. The internet's global routing table, which is used by the internet routers to determine where to send the traffic, had virtually every Egypt-bound route withdrawn, giving the internet traffic no path either in or out of the country. Vodafone also said mobile operators in Egypt had been instructed to suspend service so you couldn't get wireless internet either. Internet access was blocked shortly after midnight. Mobile phone, BlackBerry, and text messaging services also were disabled, according to Reuters. The main ISPs, Link Egypt, Vodafone Raya, Telecom Egypt, and Etisalat Misr, probably horribly mispronouncing that, are the four major ISPs that weren't working, although it looks like Noor Group, a smaller provider, was still able to connect externally. They connect the Egyptian Stock Exchange.
Aha.
Which is probably one of the reasons they were kept online.
So, it's probably less of them saying, hey, we're not going to do what the government has asked of us, and more that they needed to stay afloat. Only about 8%, I think, of the Egyptian internet population uses. So it's small. In terms of,
they're gonna get a lot more subscribers after
yes,
this.
Yes, indeed.
Arbor Networks, which monitors these sorts of things because their business is preventing DDoS attacks, among other things, put out a chart which showed the internet traffic from Egypt, and you can see if you look at the chart, right about 6 p.m. 6 p.m. probably is the local time,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Eastern Standard Time. The traffic from Egypt just plummets. It falls off a cliff. There was a big peak before it because
sure.
I think it may be true that people knew this was coming.
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly the peak is directly correlated with the drop.
Yeah, there's a peak right before the drop. And you can see the drop off is fairly steep. So it seems like all four essentially pulled their information out of the routing table at once.
It's amazing the power the Egyptian government had to make this happen so quickly and so coordinated so effectively. Look at the numbers look insane. I mean, you go from this really high peak to almost nothing. And the only thing running is something for their stock exchange, which is obviously integral for the country. But like, this is just really disconcerting just in general to think that you could lose an entire country like completely offline. I mean, it's when they blocked Twitter, that was one thing. And they blocked, I think it was, I can't remember, I think it was Facebook, but to turn off the internet, it just like seems like such a difficult concept to grasp.
Well, you know, there's a U.S. bill that is going to be voted on later this year. Some of you might already be familiar with the what's the name of this bill? Protecting Cyberspace as a National Asset Act.
The Internet Kill Switch.
PCNAA. So it's like, hey, this is the U.S. and Egypt are different countries, run in very different ways. But to give you a little taste of the kind of a kill switch shutting off an entire country.
It can happen.
It can happen. It has happened, and people are very upset about it.
And Ars Technica has a really good article up about how Egypt was able to do this and how it's different in a Western democracy. It's not impossible to do it, but it's a different situation in how you get the ISPs to cooperate over there. So the Syrian authorities have also banned certain programs that allow access to Facebook's chat application in conjunction with the Syria neighbor of Egypt. So anyway, there are other places to go if you want to find out more about the political situation there, why these protests are happening and everything. But we thought we'd keep you up to date on the technical aspect of what they're doing. Meanwhile, here in the United States, we've got our own situation with the FBI executing more than 40 warrants in a probe of pro-WikiLeaks attackers. They're going after anyone that was using low-orbit ion cannon to take down websites and, at this point, not making arrests, but raiding people's houses and seizing computers. Ars Technica also has an article up about various people reporting on forums that they used low-ion cannon. The FBI showed at their door with a search warrant and said, look, you can point to the one that was used in the attack, or we take all your computers. And so the guy said, you know what? Fifth Amendment. Take all my computers.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, all caps. FBI, FBI, police, FBI, get your arms up and don't move them. Walk downstairs right now. Do not move your hands. Two real guns pointed at me. Me in one cop car, girlfriend in the other. Took 3.5 hours. But yeah, the FBI is definitely trying to intimidate as well as seize evidence against anyone who perpetrated a DDoS attack against Visa or Amazon or any of these, you know.
What I want to know is why didn't this low orbit ion cannon software tool mask anyone's IP address?
Well, the low orbit ion cannon tool is meant for testing. It's not meant for causing attacks.
Right.
This guy wanted to be part of Anonymous, but forgot to use something like, I don't know, like the Onion router, to stay anonymous when right. They were attacking things. I mean, it seems like a bunch of kids that messed up. Or, I mean, theoretically, you could just spoof an IP address, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could. Not enough education was given out to folks who wanted to use these that your IP address would be available and would be trackable. And so you've got a lot of folks getting in trouble over this in the U.S. 40 people, 5 arrests were made in the U.K. yesterday. We mentioned that on yesterday's show. So this is part of a global effort. Now, some people are pointing out there have been DDoS attacks against WikiLeaks itself. No one seems to be investigating those.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Those don't seem to have the same priority, although you do have to take cases one at a time.
Very true.
Nothing, IS? I figured you'd have a comeback for that.
I was just going to say, let's see, you tick off the government by putting out, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of cables, basically taking off the entire world of the United States, and they're not going after people who attack WikiLeaks. I just think that's just kind of obvious.
Anonymous says that this, you know, should not really be that much of a priority. They say it's the equivalent of a sit-in. It's civil disobedience. None of these sites were permanently taken down. No information was stolen. But yet they're using the same laws that are meant to prevent malware and theft to go after people who did a little bit of mischief.
I think that analogy is all wrong. I mean, this isn't like a sit-in where you just kind of sit there and you're just kind of wasting time. This is like people like slamming against windows on a store. I mean,
well, it's like a sit-in where you go into, say, the administration building at a university campus and you disrupt the flow of traffic in and out of that building.
This is like if they were pushing people coming in. This is not them just taking up space. They're actually stopping other things from happening. I think the analogy is off.
But I mean, what's, you know, the worst that happened to PayPal was there's some slowage.
Yeah.
I mean, PayPal never went down.
Amazon didn't even blink.
You know, whoever goes to Visa and MasterCard websites to know if they're up or down anyway.
Well, it did affect some of their ability to process orders, but it wasn't disruptive. I mean,
I mean, disruptive, yeah, a little bit. But I wouldn't say it's the equivalent of, like, smashing through a store window.
Yeah.
Wait, so you think they should get in more trouble if they actually succeed at screwing up things? Or if they, I mean, does that mean there's a tolerable level of being annoying?
Well, I think that if you successfully screw up things, there is monetary value associated with what you've prevented that...
Well, yeah. I mean, the punishment should fit the crime. Is that what...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I just meant, like, is there an attempted DDoS? Or is there just DDoS?
Yeah, but DDoS is different than a break-in.
Mm-hmm.
I guess is what I'm saying. Blocking entrance to a business is different than going in and stealing money out of the cash register, right?
There's a register now?
No, in the analogy.
There's a virtual register, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you that one.
Okay.
It's different than corrupting someone's registry.
Point goes to cottage.
All right, let's move on to the IDC numbers are out for worldwide cell phone shipments. And it's very interesting. We've got a lot of shakeup in the lower end of the order. Nokia is still number one, and they're still declining. So no big surprise there. Their shipments declined 2.4%, but they still are by far the number one shipper or seller of cell phones worldwide, mostly because of feature phones, although they do have a significant smartphone shipments as well. Samsung's number two, LG number three. And Apple has slipped from number four. They've been passed by ZTE.
Oh, yeah, them.
Not to be confused with LTE.
No.
Who's ZTE?
Or Zenith.
ZTE
TV
is a Chinese company who mostly market feature phones to Africa and Latin America. They've made some inroads in the U.S. and Japan and even in Western Europe. But most of its shipments have concentrated on entry-level and mid-range devices, although they have introduced some Android-based smartphones like the Blade and the Racer recently. Now, Apple had a good quarter. They increased 2.6%. ZTE just had a better one.
Well, and they pumped out more models. I mean, Apple had model shortages.
Yeah, Apple was saying that they could have sold more had they been able to build more, but they had some supply chain issues.
Yeah, it wasn't the demand that was the problem. They just didn't have enough phones.
And I think I've seen ZTE have some phones available for like prepaid plans, and their prices are actually pretty low. So for them to actually end up in this list is not that surprising. And this, I'm not sure if this is actually shipped to consumers or this is just shipped to carriers, because if they're big in China, I mean, there's a billion people right there that can have access to this. I mean, they just have to put them in stores to ship it. So the real question is, what exactly is this study talking about?
It's talking about shipments. IDC is always shipments. But, that's a fair point. But usually worldwide shipments do translate into sales. You don't have a ton of returns, I don't think.
Well, I mean, I think Microsoft had a big thing recently where they're like, we shipped 2 million phones, but they would not tell you how many they actually sold on the consumer level. So, I mean, these are statistics, and we can always manipulate them like crazy, though, couldn't we?
I rely on the IDC statistics, though. I think the shipments do reflect who's popular.
Maybe not for the kin. Maybe that's a good example of
probably not
when shipments and sales don't match
up. I think that's an
up.
Unusual situation,
exactly.
Something like the kin.
And that's why it was a big story.
All right, too trusting.
Yes, I am. No, I'm not. I'm not too trusting normally, but I do rely. These numbers seem to bear out if you look at them over the years. All right, let's move into some discussion stories. We've got Eric Schmidt talking to Davos in Switzerland. Why aren't we at Davos?
Oh, we've got jobs to do here.
But we're technorati.
I know. The whole Davos thing, it sounds like there are a lot of fascinating people talking about really interesting stuff, but there tends to be this elite aspect of it that
it's no TED.
Rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I wish I was there, but...
Speaking at the World Economics Forum, Eric Schmidt, now chairman of Google, well, he's still CEO until...
Chairman
April,
Schmidt.
Said that Google has far more profound concerns than social networks. He's not worried about Facebook. He says Microsoft has more cash, more engineers, more global reach. We see competition from Microsoft every day. He also gave an interview to the BBC where he said similar things about Facebook. Let's listen to what he had to say.
We hire more people in a week than the total number of people who have left Google at any point in time of their service to go to Facebook. And my understanding is the vast majority of people at Facebook are not from Google. So I'm not sure that criticism is a fair one.
Yeah, so he's basically saying, you know what, Facebook's not stealing all of our talent. They got a couple of high-profile people, whatever. Facebook users tend to use Google search. Facebook's ads business doesn't displace our advertising. We're not worried about them.
Well, I'm sure that's not totally true. I mean, that's a simplistic answer. I mean, of course, Google is watching Facebook closely. It's not like they're like, they're a different company. Who gives an F? But they really are two different companies. And I mean, he makes a really good point. I'm a Facebook user. I use Google almost exclusively for search. And I don't find them to be direct competitors. And I'm sometimes not sure why there's a Google versus Facebook argument. They're two very different companies.
Ayaz, do you see this sort of rise of the comparing of Google and Facebook? I think the reason is because Facebook is rising so fast, right?
Well, I don't know if Facebook's the right competitor. I know Google's talked about how they relate to the social game and everything. But the fact is Microsoft is gunning for Google, where Facebook doesn't really have to do that. Because I think it was a couple of months ago where people thought that Facebook had changed their design because they were searching in Google for Facebook and they went to a different website. So the people who are using Facebook aren't necessarily those who are loyal to Google, not loyal to anything, all right? So they're going to use Google no matter what. Facebook, I don't think they have reason to worry about that at all. Microsoft, well, they're gunning for them.
Do you think Eric Schmidt is pointing out Microsoft because Microsoft is perceived as soft right now? Steve Ballmer is a little bit criticized in the press. Microsoft is seen as lagging behind. Google looks better if you compare them to Microsoft than they do if you compare them to Facebook.
But I don't know. I think if Google is strong and clearly the leader, then they wouldn't even worry about Microsoft. I mean, I think it's a little telling that he's... I think what he's saying is Microsoft is stronger than you think.
I think Microsoft, comparing themselves to Microsoft in this time, it's a good idea in general. But with the way Facebook's growing, maybe they just need to kind of deflect a little bit. But I still think that I think he's telling the truth. I really think he's really more worried about Microsoft gunning for them again. Because again, you got Bing and other. Facebook doesn't go into searches, but they do go more into advertising. So they're probably kind of worried a little bit about that. Where you see all your friends' pictures up everywhere with these ads, which I'm sure Google would love to be able to do. So they're probably keeping them in their rearview mirror. But I think the comparison is it works.
In the BBC interview, Eric Schmidt was very quick to point out that there is nothing wrong between him and Larry and Sergey. This is just a redefinition. All these talks about how he's on his way out are wrong. But I still believe, even if all of what he says is true, if they are friends and this is just efficiently figuring out, I think the dispute over China, and there was a dispute between the three of them, is what led to them deciding to redefine and make these lines more efficient. And he addressed that. He said, between the three of us, I have always been the person who believes the most in expanding into China. And he is talking about moving Android into China. He wants to work with the Chinese business community to bring Android into China now. Do you think China is going to be receptive to that, given the controversy over Google's operations in China for search?
No, I mean, Schmidt, I mean, he's a businessman, right? I mean, and Sergey and Larry, those guys are more idyllic kind of people. They're thinking, oh, you know, we want to not be evil and everything. And Schmidt's like, let's make Google gigantic. I think China would be quite amenable to working with Schmidt, especially when he makes a public stance like this and says, hey, look, I want to work with you guys and bring our operating system to you. Mm-hmm. I think this is actually a good move by bringing him down a little from CEO and top guy. The public will see Google as a positive thing again with those two guys, one guy on roller skates every time you see him. And then Schmidt will take care of the dirty work. He'll just be a little lower on the list there.
All right, let's talk about a new study at, not a new study. It's an article on the BBC about 3D television and whether it's actually dangerous to watch. We've heard companies say that children under 6 years old shouldn't watch television in 3D in great amounts because it can hurt their development. And there's a lot of controversy around this right now. Jeffrey Katzenberg, CEO of DreamWorks Animation, who has an interest in this, is quoted as saying, for a 5 or 6 year old child to go in and see an 82 minute movie once every month, I have to say there's not anybody legitimate in the medical profession who has suggested that we're jeopardizing the health of our children. And if you're like, well, of course he's going to say that. He's in the movie-making business. Karen Sparrow, education advisor at the Association of Optometrists, says the patients that we see would be a very, very tiny percentage and is a very low risk for people who would actually be susceptible to being disturbed by this. And there was even some talk in this article that it's really children 3 or 4 who would be at the most risk, not children up to 6.
This is also, I mean, it's an emerging technology. There's a limited amount of scientific evidence and studies. And I think that, you know, in 5 years, it's going to be a lot more obvious if young kids are really getting screwed up by 3D. It's easy now to say there's not enough evidence, so we can't say that that's happening. But it doesn't mean it's not. Just means that, you know, we're on one side of.
Well, it doesn't mean it is. We
it doesn't mean it is.
We run into this all the time, right? Which it's like, well, what they're saying is children are still developing their vision,
right,
at a certain point in time. 3D TV could affect that. Mm-hmm. How much? We don't know. We should find out. And it's easy for someone like Jeffrey Katzenberg to say, because we don't know, there's no effect. And it's easy for someone who's concerned about their children to say, because we don't know, I'm not going to let them watch 3D TV. But the fact is, we really just don't know.
We just don't know. So what do you do in that situation? Don't let your kids watch 3D just to be safe? That's not necessarily the right answer.
But then they're going to sneak out, and they're going to go watch a 3D
and it's
movie.
It's going to become the new pack of cigarettes.
They're going to sneak out of the house.
So that 3D movie they're not supposed to be watching.
I'm making it forbidden. All the kids will want to watch 3D. Exactly. Brilliant.
They're doing this on
purpose.
That's
what's going on.
I think it's
conspiracy. They're doing this on purpose, aren't they? This is a big ruse.
I don't see a lot of 6-year-olds sneaking out of the house to go watch 3D.
That is true. That's true.
I'm not sure how much of a conspiracy this might be. Especially because they don't really have a whole lot of money at that age either.
It's amazing to me how much the whole 3D debate continues to rage on. I mean, it's like no signs of stop. You know, Roger Ebert is very anti-3D and, you know, keeps anytime anybody writes something that provides a good argument by why 3D is just not worth it. He's always retweeting. You know, he obviously has a big following in the movie world. I'm surprised that it upsets people on both sides so much.
I think it's because we really want it.
Yeah.
And it's not quite sufficient.
It's not good enough yet.
Yeah. It's like it's that classic marketing problem where they're like, we have 3D now, finally. Because that's been the thing, right, for years, is like, you know, televisions will eventually be 3D in the future, right? Here it is. And then we look at it and we're like, that's crap. I got to wear glasses.
Yeah, it's not.
And
like,
it doesn't even look. It makes my head hurt.
Yeah. Like, HGTV just looked better. And
where's
like,
my jetpack?
Looks great. This is like, I have to wear things and I look stupid and don't take a picture.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that 3D has always impressed me, when I watch sports, I'm like, this is great. 3D is awesome for a basketball game. And then somebody writes an article about how something about 3D takes away from the user experience during sporting events. It's like, you can't win.
Yeah.
No one's going to agree on this.
And until we actually get holograms better than the Princess Leia red smudge that we showed yesterday
right.
on TNT.
Until then.
A long, long time from now.
Expect war.
Amazon.com announced their fourth quarter financial results today, and two milestones were met. First $10 billion quarter, woo, great for you and Amazon stockholders. And Kindle sales have now overtaken paperback books. I don't mean Kindle sales. I should rephrase that. Kindle book sales. They sell more Kindle books than paperback books. That is their most popular format on the giant bookseller site. They passed hardbacks a while back. Now they pass paperbacks.
Am I supposed to be shocked and surprised?
Kindle books are now the most popular format of books on Amazon.
Why wouldn't they be? Amazon made a Kindle so you would buy Kindle books.
But in other words,
they're doing it right.
People are buying not books. We're living in the future.
I know, but Amazon wanted just this. They got it.
You're dead inside.
I'm not dead inside. I'm saying this is their business model and it's working.
But I think the big deal is when they passed hardbacks, everybody was like, yeah, yeah. But people are still buying real books in bigger numbers because paperbacks, everybody buys paperbacks. But now they've passed paperbacks. That means that
it's a natural progression of digital books.
It
was going to happen eventually. It just happened to have happened.
But isn't that amazing that it happened?
It happens to have happened, Tom.
Future.
Happened.
The future finally happened. Now
there
it's
the past.
Behind
us.
Oh, there's the future back there. What's it doing back there?
I'm just not surprised. I, you know, go Amazon. This is what they wanted. That
it actually happened a lot faster than I thought it would happen.
Me too.
Well, it's because they were brilliant.
Wait, what do you mean, me too?
No, I'm saying the fact that it happened quickly is a bit of a surprise to me.
You were just saying you weren't surprised.
Well, I'm not surprised. All right. Semantics, Merritt. Plus one for that side of the cottage. Hate both of you.
Akhtar, what were you going to say?
I was going to say this happened so much faster than I think expected because they managed to put the Kindle application on everything. They have it on the web. They have their device. I mean, if anything, this means for anybody else who's thinking about even locking down their service to their hardware, don't do it. Just do what Amazon did. You can have your little lock stuff. You can have your idiotic DRM. But if you put your application out on everything, people will use it. And so, like, I think it's 115 e-books for every 100 paperbacks. I mean, that's great.
That's pretty crazy. And a good point about the DRM. Although I think we're headed for some pain with that when people start to move around, right? The Kindle hasn't been around long enough for most people to want to switch devices. When they start to want to switch devices and realize all those books they bought are tied to that device and you can't read them on that device, there's going to be trouble.
Yeah, that means it determines what device you buy, right? As long as it has that application, you're okay. Like, I can never get the Nook because I have Kindle books, right? Because they're never going to allow that to be a cross-platform kind of thing. But that seems like it seems bad on Barnes & Noble's side. They're not helping. That'll be the argument.
Curtis B. says, it doesn't matter that Ace Detect is a bully. You were still right, Sarah.
Thank you. Well,
I didn't mean to bully you.
No. I said you were a bully. I was kidding. I like to incite the chat room every once in a while, and I'm glad it worked. Thanks, guys, for rallying. It was my rally cry. Tom's a bully. Hope he doesn't read this.
All right. Well, I do read it.
Well, okay. I guess you're perfect.
Give me your lunch
money. You can talk and read the chat room at the same time. Not sure how that works.
I can't chew gum and talk at the same time.
Yeah.
Sony, we got a little more information about the Sony NGP. Gosh, I hope they get a new name soon. When is E3? It's not till June. We got to wait till then to stop calling the next PSP the NGP.
They end up calling it PSP 2. Don't.
I know.
Don't worry about
why
that.
Why are they bothering with this? Anyway.
Well, go ahead.
Jack Tretton from Sony told Eurogamer and Game Informer that the quad-core gaming handheld, the Sony NGP, will be more than the Nintendo 3DS. It'll be more than $250, but it won't be $600.
Oh, so that's comforting.
It's going to be somewhere in there, $300-$400, something like that. He laughed it off, actually. It's not going to be $599.
It'll be $598.
That's ridiculous. It'll be $549.
Exactly.
We also heard from John Carmack, id co-founder, saying that he thinks that the Sony Next Generation Portable is light years beyond, actually a generation beyond smartphones, because of the quad-core processing and the 3G connection that'll be built in.
Yeah, that's technically right, because I think the new phones that are coming out are dual-core, and this is quad-core, so way to go, Carmack.
There you go. Stating the obvious. And also, it looks like there will be a Wi-Fi-only version of the NGP, so that and hopefully that one will be a little cheaper, so if you don't want to be tied into a contract, you can buy that one instead. Anyway, I'm looking forward to the NGP. It looks really good.
Looks really good, and I'd like to know what the price point ends up being. It's like, if it's not going to be $600, and he's kind of making a joke about how that's such a ridiculously high number, it's probably not going to be in the 500s either, or else he's going to look like kind of a jerk for having said that and led people astray.
Yeah,
$399 more like? I mean, that seems a little bit
but that's
more realistic.
A pretty high cost for a portable gaming device. You got to think, $400.
Yeah,
It's got a crazy OLED screen with a great resolution.
Exactly.
I mean, it's going to command a high price, but the idea that they have a Wi-Fi version is a great little, entry-level thing. So they can have that one be low price, and the next one's going to be, $50 or $60 or maybe even $100 more, because you're going to go into the store and look at this and go, I could get 3G for a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So they just need to make sure that Wi-Fi one is priced right.
Exactly, and then that's the price that everyone talks about. So that
exactly.
The low price, right. Mm-hmm. Although I'm worried about the battery life. We'll see what that's about. On to the news fuse. California resident Donald LeBun filed a lawsuit this week accusing Apple of knowingly unloading flawed iPhone 4s onto customers, citing personal experience with his own iPhone 4 and iPhone 3GS. That's right, Glassgate has finally spawned a lawsuit. Laboon argues that Apple knows about this flaw in the iPhone's design, that the glass can shatter. He says his shattered 3 weeks after he got it. And Apple should refund the purchase price to all customers covered by the class in addition to repair fees and restitution.
You know, I may be stating the obvious, but usually something has to happen in order for the glass to shatter. You know, like dropping your phone onto your tile kitchen floor.
And Apple does advertise it as being stronger than the 3GS and more solid.
I don't know. Maybe he threw his phone against a wall.
Yeah.
We don't have all the information.
At the antenna.
Rim might be in a little trouble with India. You may have remembered the saga so far. Well, India wanted to be able to monitor all messages that pass through BlackBerry phones. And Rim said, okay, we'll give you that ability, government. While regular consumer messaging can be monitored, Rim now admits they can't actually monitor communications over VPN. So what kind of trouble could Rim be in? Possibly a ban on BlackBerry devices. So Rim's got till the 31st to find a solution. And we're on to this again. 31st. We'll see.
3 days. They can do it.
Yep.
Well, probably not. A leaked image from Costco and an accidentally posted Amazon wireless page both seem to confirm that the Motorola Atrix 4G will cost $150 if you get a contract, $600 without. The Atrix 4G will run on the AT&T network, and it was a big hit at CES. It was like the angels had anointed this to be the magnificent phone. And, you know, this thing was great because you could turn it into a laptop or a desktop using docking stations. The Amazon page actually had a little bit more information. A February 11th release date for the phone.
Oh, February 11th. I'm going to get one. I really want one.
Well, I want to see it actually work in real life.
I've seen it work in real life.
No, I mean, like, actually, like, with the network, not, like, in a little vacuum. It's like, oh, yeah, it works. Of course it works now.
I've seen it at CES in working with the
network.
Were
you inside a vacuum?
Real world.
I was inside a vacuum. Microsoft's Amanda Lefevre told Mobilize the company is looking into selling Microsoft Office using the Mac App Store.
What?
The Mac App Store makes it easy for users to download and install new applications while also giving Apple 30% of the sales. Then again, if you want an Office on a Mac, you can always install it the old-fashioned way, but they might sell a few more if they made it really easy to download like that.
Cats and dogs playing together in harmony. If you want to run homebrew games on the PS3, well, I'm sorry. A Sony patch to the PS3 firmware says forget it.
Wait.
Sony's patch was hacked in just a few hours. Homebrew gamers, go about your business. Sony, it's your move.
The mother of an autistic 11-year-old boy who went on US TV to lambast Microsoft for labeling her son an Xbox Live cheat has admitted she made a mistake.
Oops.
After Microsoft released evidence for the lad's actions, including the transfer of the gamer tag to an out-of-town console and achievements earned out of order, Microsoft has offered Julius a free month of Xbox Live to start fresh with a new gamer tag. Oops.
Yeah, you can still cheat, no matter who you are. At least 51 torrent sites have been taken down this month thanks to joint efforts by the Motion Picture Association of America and its Dutch counterpart, Brain. I want to pronounce it Brain, even though it's B-R-E-I-N, because it just sounds cool. 12 in the United States and 39 in the Netherlands were taken down. The two groups say they were able to work with the site's hosting providers to take them offline, though the names of the affected sites have not been released because they're trying to keep them from popping up elsewhere. So if you don't tell anybody which sites you took down, no one will ever know. And apparently, despite the large number of sites taken down, Torrent Freak notes their absence hasn't really been noted on the internet. All the main sites are still there.
Well, Samsung has shipped 2 million, that's 2 mil, of its Galaxy Tab tablet since the product's launch just 3 months ago, and the company is already planning some kind of addition into the line, according to a leaked PR schedule for the Mobile World Congress. Looks like Samsung wants to get out the Galaxy Tab 2 before that old Apple iPad 2 hits. And they should.
Matt Cutts, who heads up web spam team at Google, today announced a change to Google's search algorithm, which aims to improve results and reward sites which contribute original content to the internet. That's a great idea. Sites that scrape or copy other sites' content will be demoted. Demand media, purveyors of vast quantities of content, often thought to be low quality, could suffer from this change right when its stock IPO has been released.
Ooh, bad news for demand.
Bad for that, but good for search.
Actually, bad news for people who bought the stock right away. It's been going down a little bit. Every day. All right, finally, Twitter is kicking off its Super Bowl site. This is another way they're going to make money. An official site for Super Bowl tweets is available at sbtwitter.com. NFL.com. It's an official partnership, otherwise they couldn't use the word Super Bowl, with the NFL, and allows you to see tweet clouds across the United States about what people are saying around the topic of the Super Bowl. So as you can see, L.A. is for the Packers, Wisconsin's for the Packers, and the rest of the United States is cheering for Pittsburgh.
Except Nevada, who's all about teamwork, because team.
Yes, right. That's true.
I'm sorry, it's but trending. You know, I
Colorado is for the Super Bowl.
They're like, yay, Super Bowl.
East Coast for Pittsburgh. This is a really boring tweet cloud. I'm sorry.
It's kind of boring right now.
I mean, well, there's like three words involved.
Wait, maybe during the advertisements, we're going to see different things trending on this, right? We're going to probably see like, maybe if the halftime show's got some controversy or something, we won't just see Pittsburgh. We might see more profane things.
Yeah, maybe Fergie will pop up here and there. Puppy Bowl.
Or Talking Baby.
I love the Puppy Bowl.
Something like that.
There you go.
E-Trade, FTW.
Tag clouds are our friends.
You know, this will be much more interesting when the actual American gridiron football game is happening a week from this Sunday.
Oh, yes, that's the big game?
Yeah, people are actually, you know, talking about it a lot online. Anybody who doesn't know, if you're outside the United States, it's almost a holiday in the United States.
What do you mean, almost?
I mean, it is practically a holiday.
It's my holiday.
People call you everybody sick on Monday?
Best day of the year.
Wait a minute. You're not coming in on Monday? The day after
Why
Super
would
Bowl?
I? I'm going to be very hungover.
Yes.
Do you want me here?
No.
I don't think you do.
No, you should stay home.
It's called,
I'm just kidding.
Liquid Monday.
I watch very somberly go. And quietly.
Call it Liquid Monday and just keep drinking. It's the way to go.
That's the way to. That's the way to.
I like his style.
That's the way to cure that hangover. But yeah, no, the Super Bowl is a big deal. So I think this will be a somewhat watershed moment for Twitter, where they finally reap the rewards of what they've built monetarily. It's not like, well, this is the first time anything like this has happened on Twitter, but this is the first time Twitter's really gone in whole hog. They did it with the World Cup, but they didn't do it very well. This looks like it's done a lot better, to where people will actually really get into it, and they've got a partnership with the NFL, so they're making some money off of it.
They better have some servers ready, though. If anybody sees that fail whale on Sunday, there's going to be some angry messages on Facebook. That's what you'll probably see.
Tumblr. We're going to flock to Tumblr and say that Twitter's down.
I'm going to Jaiku.
The tag cloud doesn't work. I'm going to check.
On to the calendar.
Why, Tom, Ayaz, and Jason, did you know that on Monday, January 31st, Apple will drop its XServe line of server products?
Yeah, I actually heard that they were having a hard time making sure that they shipped out the last of them before they hit the deadline hits.
So, watch out.
Goodbye, servers.
Servers dropping. 31st. Also in the news, the HP CEO, Leo Apotheker, says the new web OS products will be shipping just mere weeks after their February 9th reveal. But there's another big announcement coming on March 14th, which is like even bigger and better.
Yeah, they're going to talk about their whole line of products and how it all works together and how they're awesome. And
wait a minute. Ecosystem?
HP has this whole
buzzword
thing
bingo.
Now where they're competing with Apple to be like the cool company.
They have said particularly, like, we want to be cooler than Apple.
Yeah. They're one of their goals is, instead of people saying, is this as cool as Apple? It'll be, is this as cool as what HP does?
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean,
that's a great goal.
Yeah.
All I can say is good luck with that HP.
Yes.
Officially.
Exactly.
Hey, they've got cool printers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Cool printers.
For sure.
I do like the emailing printer, you know.
They actually really do have some cool printers.
Exactly. On to the voicemail, 260-TNT show. We got a call from the fabled John Henry about Facebook's social captures, the new social captures that make you identify pictures from your Facebook friends.
Hey there, TNT. My name is John Henry. The other day, you were all expressing concerns about Facebook's new social capture feature, which allows you to authenticate yourself by recognizing pictures of your friends. Well, it just so happened that last weekend, while attempting to log on using my Google TV, I was treated to an advanced sneak preview of the feature. And let me tell you, all of your fears were mostly right. There were a bunch of people who I didn't recognize, either because I didn't know them well or because it was a weird off-kilter picture of them. I ended up using all three of my skips to get past the ones I didn't know, and there were a few photos in which I had to guess. Although I should say that I have a lot of quote-unquote friends, so most people may not have the same problem as me. On the upside, there are no silly cartoons or baby photos, so Facebook may be using facial recognition software in the background to only serve up photos that you are likely to recognize. Okay. Anyway, thanks. I'm John Henry, signing off.
That's interesting that they're only using faces, not just weird avatars.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. R.J. Lewis also wrote in, said her mom came across this and it prevented her from being able to log into her Farmville app because most of her Facebook friends are either high school friends of her daughter or Farmville friends. And so she didn't recognize any of them, and she lost crops. It was costly.
That is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
That is
it
really sad.
Just means that everybody's using Facebook wrong. I think you're supposed to use it for people you know.
You're using it wrong.
Come on now. Before, just less than a month ago, I had never even met you until I met you at CES IRL. And I considered you a friend last year.
That's because we met in September.
Oh.
I put such a great impression when I showed up at Petaluma.
He was here in person in September.
I was here, like right there. Where you were sitting, actually.
Well, more beer.
How about that?
On to the email, tnt@twit.tv. Tom, the power system engineer, says, I was listening to TNT 164 and the story about Japan blocking Slingbox-like devices. One reason, he says, why this is such a big issue in Japan can be found in the decline of national anime consumption and the desire to increase revenue through a more substantial export source. This is, however, undermined by a vibrant fan subbing community, which acquires raw original video footage from Japan through something like a Slingbox, and then subtitles anime series themselves. So essentially, the Japanese airings of the anime come through a Slingbox to the United States. They record them and subtitle them. These fan subs are very popular because licensing of anime for international sales has always been a tediously long process, and the subsequent English dubs are often regarded as inferior. To combat the problem, Japanese animation studios are now trying to cut off these fan subs at the source and internationally halting legal subtitled streaming until licensees there do the same. As usual, this only results in more people being driven to piracy because they can't watch their series legally anymore.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I had no idea about the whole fan subbing community.
Me either.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I've had a couple of friends
really interesting.
Talk to me about this. Derek and Eva just kept talking about this anime stuff, how hard it is to actually get this stuff in the States. It takes forever to get here. And so this workaround was the way it was getting to the States. And the fact that it's getting cut off just means that people can't watch it for a while. I mean, I guess it does. You know, people can go to piracy for this, but you could just wait, you know, and just get it legally later.
Nobody waits. Nobody
but you can. It's an option. It's a very, it's a forgotten option. Try it.
Yeah, but there's no reason to. Unless you're going to, and they might break down your door if the FBI.
Maybe, well, they could move to Japan.
Yeah.
Another email from Steven in Charlotte, North Carolina, who says, first off, I love the show, but I need to keep you honest about something.
All
when
right.
talking about Time Warner / Time Warner Cable, you need to be specific now since they're two separate companies. Time Warner Cable was spun off from Time Warner, the content company, last year and is now a publicly traded company.
Ah, very good point, Stephen.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you
good
for,
point,
for
and
keeping
it is
us
taken.
Honest. Yeah, so Time Warner Cable not necessarily in any conflict of interest as far as bidding on Time Warner television properties. We were talking about this with Netflix and Sperling yesterday. So thank you, Stephen, for keeping us honest. You also can keep us honest. When my voice changes, I'll sound much different. You also can keep us honest by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. I, as Aktar, pcmag.com. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Iaz.
Where can people find you online?
They can go to pcmag.com. I got a post right now talking about casting the WikiLeaks movie. And it's actually, I had a blast doing it, and it made the labs crack up. So I would say check that out. But definitely check out the rest of PCMag.com because it's awesome as well.
Please do that. And we will see you on Monday with an all-new Tech News Today, your way to get the most accurate, factual, substantial, comprehensive tech news on the internet. TNT is available online at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you Monday.